Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Klug, joined, as always, by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, we are sans Ronald J. Martin today, which is a sad
thing. And he's not even traveling.
He's not
living the glam life this time.
I'm sad for him in part because of the flu, but I know what's really hurting him now is that he's at home and not traveling. So
that's right. He's not at a Hyatt place somewhere.
He's not at a Hyatt place. He's not in Louisville, you know, so I think they're... We got a couple of weeks of cushion here between Sojourn conferences. So,
I think if Ronnie being out with the flu teaches us anything, it's that he's no Michael Jordan, because this could have been his flu game, and instead he called out sick.
Yeah, and for those of you who hate sports and wish we would never talk about it on the program, that's in reference to a game that Michael Jordan played when he had the flu and scored how many points, Pipe? It was a virtuoso performance. I know that
it was. I want to say it was in the 50s, wasn't it?
I think it was in the 50s. Yeah, yeah. Just one of those quintessential Michael Jordan games.
I don't remember the specific stat line of that one. I just know that, you know, it was one of those ones where, like, he was getting IVs and puking during timeouts and stuff like this.
Unbelievable.
And then came out. And so, like, this could have been Ronnie's game. Like, we could have had to mute him while he retched into a garbage can and then came back to make his salient, I don't know, man, points.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And instead, he's laid up sipping on Pedialyte.
But it would have been a very hipster garbage can, kind of a repurposed sheet metal minimalist garbage can.
See, I would have gone with like a mini bourbon barrel or something.
Ooh, I like it.
With a biodegradable trash can liner in it.
That's it. Because if you're a hipster, you can't just toss your trash into a standard plastic bin. It's got to be.
Yeah, no glad bags for hipsters.
No glad bags. Absolutely. Pipe, was that flu game? That was against the Jazz, right?
You know what? I feel like a terrible sports fan. I'm about to look it up.
Dude, look it up. Look it up. We got to get this right.
So pardon my typing. Michael Jordan flu game. This is great audio.
Absolutely. The reason I ask, I was having a
97 NBA Finals.
Okay, yeah, I was having a talk with a friend about the life cycle of Utah's uniform over the years, and we were remarking on the fact that that era's uniform, the kind of late 90s, like Jordan, you know, Malone, Stockton, you know, that era uniform was the worst Jazz uniform because it had that weird, like,
it was like purple and it had like the mountains on it.
Yeah, it was purple. It had the little like outline of the mountain range on it. It was a mess. It was so bad.
That was the era when like purple and teal were all the rage because Utah went purple. There was the Charlotte Hornets with the purple and teal. In baseball, there was the Marlins with the teal and the Rockies had purple.
Yeah.
And everybody went purple and teal and I'm a Vikings fan, and I'll just go ahead and say it. Purple is a terrible uniform color.
Yeah, it's just kind of
teal is worse.
Oh, teal, yeah, teal's far worse. Absolutely, absolutely. But Pipe, we are treading on some dangerous ground here in that we're
getting a little sporty.
We're getting a little sporty. We've probably already lost listeners who are just...
Stick with us. We're moving away from sports, listeners.
We're moving right away from it, and we're moving into a hot cup of Ligaris Roasters coffee. If you haven't done so... visit happyrantpodcast.com, grab a bag of Ligaris Roasters coffee. Ligaris Roasters is growing its empire. Pipe, I don't know if I mentioned this on the program last week, but Ligaris is in our hipster grocery store here in the Jackson area. It's called Grubbs, and Ligaris Roasters coffee, Happy Rant Signature Blend, is now available in Grubbs grocery store here in Jackson. So.
I wonder when we can get Happy Rant mugs from Missionalware next to it, so it can be like the holiday gift package. You know how they'll do those packages that are nicely cellophane wrapped with the coffee inside the mug. That's what we need at Grubbs.
Yes, bro. I don't feel like we made it until we're wrapped in cellophane. You know what I mean? There needs to be some cellophane involved in our
and ribbon
coffee release. So
and I know that Ronnie would be excited about this because it's a holiday themed idea.
That's right. And you know what could go in that gift basket, Pipe? Ronnie's holiday novel, The Christmas Sweater. So I don't know if the release of that book is going to sync up perfectly with this gift basket cellophane situation that we've got in the works, but I would love to see a copy of The Christmas Sweater in there as well.
Well, that's something for us to aspire to for Christmas season 2018.
That's right. That's right. But Pipe, I aspire to getting through these three unique topics this morning. And I want to start with one that you put in front of us last week. You seemed a little worked up. I don't know. I don't know you so well enough that I know your like your text proclivities and that I can interpret your like nonverbals through the text. But you brought up this idea of how complementarian men always sound like jerks when they talk about women. And when you first texted that over, I laughed, but then I realized, wait a minute, I'm a white middle-aged complementarian man, so I probably can't say anything right about women either. So talk about the headspace you were in when you floated these texts out to Ron and myself.
Well, and given last week's episode and our constant need for disclaimers, I'm going to go ahead and say this. We are walking on very thin ice. And so whenever we fall through, that's okay. We'll just drown. Like we're just going for it on this one, because as two white evangelical males who come from complementarian backgrounds,
everything in the world is our fault.
We can do no right when it comes to this topic. So here we go.
Absolutely.
The headspace I was in was spending a fair amount of time reading up on the allegations against Judge Roy Moore and then the Harvey Weinstein thing, and just this rash of revelations about sexual abuse, mostly of women, although in some cases of boys as well. And then seeing the conservative complementarian church leaders' responses to that, which I believe were done with the right spirit of upholding truth and morality and defending women from the scum who would abuse them. Mm. However, when these church leaders talk about women, it comes off so condescending and so – it's not demeaning like name-calling. It's demeaning like making women little and worthless and sound very weak. At least that's how it comes off to me.
Now, give me an example, Pipe, and you don't have to name names of what guy said what thing.
Okay.
But, like, give me an example of this type of statement.
Things like, women are unique and precious and to be defended, and I teach my sons this regularly. I saw quotes like that.
And
again, the spirit of that is teach your boys to respect women. With which right. I wholeheartedly agree, especially because I'm raising two young women. So you better raise your sons to respect them, because I'm going to raise them to tell your sons to respect them.
Absolutely.
But when you say it that way, when somebody says it that way, it sounds like women are these little fragile beings who have no backbone and no will and no capacity to stand up for themselves or accomplish things aside from the grand support and defense of the knight in shining armor or something.
Dude, yeah, you're so right. It's almost like, in that rhetoric, it's almost like women exist just to be defended. And I don't know what these guys are talking about when they talk like that, to be honest.
It sounds so sort of Victorian to me. You know,
it sounds very Victorian.
So I'm watching a show on Netflix right now called Turn, and it's about Revolutionary War era America. And
dude,
so
I've seen Turn. Turn is dope. Yeah,
it's a good show. I'm maybe just a couple episodes into season two, but one of the interesting dynamics is watching the upper crust ladies in New York and Philadelphia who are trying to mimic, you know, British culture, and how sort of like the Victorian, they are essentially decorations. That's what women were. They were decorations who played hard to get, at least as depicted in this show. So very little intellect, very little will, no say in any matters. And then, you know, and of course the heroines of the show are the ones who break outside that mold and are fiercely independent and strong.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like the complementarian language, and I don't know that it's the intent. I don't want to disparage people's hearts behind things, because I don't know that. But the language seems to depict women like that. They are essentially wallflowers meant to be attractive and to raise kids and to be defended. And as opposed to, like, you know, all of the dynamic, complete human beings that they are, with the ability to speak up for themselves. And that's not to say that men should not defend women, because there's a clear power dynamic where in America men hold a huge amount of power.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that should be in pursuit of sort of rightness and justice, not in sort of this, this coddling precious thing that, that seems to be depicted.
Yeah. It's funny, man. And I think most of the guys who talk that way, they do actually think that way. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like, oops, I just said it wrong. That's kind of how they roll. And I think that's how they think of their wives and their families. And maybe they're just married to different kinds of women. I'm married to a very strong woman, who's always been very strong. And my wife knows that, I mean, if push came to shove, I would kill for her and I would die for her. But I've never been tempted to make that kind of demure China doll sort of statement about her, because that's not how I see her, you know?
Yeah. And Mike, having met her a couple of times, I would guess that there are times you might have to hold her back.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, as opposed to like, hold on, I've got this, honey. You go over there and sniffle in the corner. It's more like, hey, don't cut him. Yeah. Or at least don't cut him too deep.
Don't cut him. Yeah. Jerk, one of my favorite KK moments was I had written a column here in Jackson a couple of years ago that made this entire small town mad at me because of something that I said. And we were at a basketball game and all these people were coming at me from this town. And KK just like flew into the middle of that melee and started like, you know, throwing down with these people. And I'm like, whoa, baby, you know, back off.
Terribly un-Victorian.
Terribly un-Victorian of her, but also awesome at the same time. So yeah, I know what you mean, Pipe. And maybe, do you think there's a sense of, for this type of complimentarian man, maybe like, yeah, least said, best said. Like we don't really need a statement from you. You know, just treat your people well. You know, treat women and your wife in your life well, and treat men in your life well, for that matter. I don't know. I don't know that another statement is needed.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
It seems. I mean, it is a little bit of a, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing. Because if you say nothing about it, the critics will say, you know, they will point out that flaw. And
for sure.
You know, that's there's some fairness in that.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's indicative of what happens when, I mean, you see the same things in racial conversations when there's a power differential. And mm-hmm. so there's one group, again, white males for the most part, who hold the cards, and they're trying to speak into this gap. But the language is often very trite. I mean, the way that complementarians talk about women echoes of the idea of separate but equal that was put forth about the races in decades past. It's not the same. I'm not drawing a one-to-one comparison, but there is sort of a, you know, that whole like equal, what is it? Equal but different, or whatever the language is. Yeah. Separate but equal is real close to that. And what that was simply a veiled way to keep minorities apart. And I don't think that's the same intent with gender, but the dynamics are the same. And so, yeah, I think a lot of times, I think what needs to be upheld is more just general justice, rightness, fairness applied equally to both genders, all races. And that's, so like in my workplace, this is something that I've read about and thought about and talked to others about. In terms of how to work well with women. And I have no idea if I'm doing a good job or not, but my intent is to treat a woman exactly like I would treat a man.
Yeah.
Because that's fair.
Right.
So not to try to grant them favor because they're women and say, oh, you know, I know you've been mistreated, so we're going to do this. It's just, no, we're going to treat your ideas the same. We're going to treat your skills the same. We're going to treat your merits the same. I think the same should be true in almost every circumstance. And because justice is justice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's wise. And do you think, Pipe, at some level, it's an attempt on behalf of some of these complementarian men to paint their life in a more kind of romantic way than it actually is? I mean, I think we all probably at the end of the day would like to think of ourselves somewhat as knights in shining armor, but to a certain degree, like that's just not how life is. I mean, I look at a lot of these like complementarian wives and they just seem really tired because they're, you know, raising 8 kids basically on their own. And yeah, I don't know, it doesn't look from the outsider's perspective, it doesn't look super romantic. So maybe it's rhetorically along the lines of, you know, hey, feel better about this thing that we're both in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think there's just a blind spot to it, yeah, where, again, I think the men who I'm thinking of, for the most part, I don't know all of them, mm-hmm, don't view women as less.
Yeah.
But their words sound like they do.
Sure.
And so there's just a blind spot. Like, do you know how you come across when you say stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
My guess is that they're just so steeped in the culture of this thing that they don't see it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just a blind spot. And so it's, I don't know. It was something that at the time we were texting, I was rather heated about.
Dude,
it.
You were worked up, man. You were worked up.
There may have been some name calling involved.
There may have been some things that we've sanitized for the air because we're radio pros.
Two good things happened. One, I'm thankful that there were text messages because that's where you can say things that you can't say in any other context. And two, yeah, I had several days to cool off a little bit and sound a little bit more level-headed.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
I hope I sound a little bit more level-headed.
Most definitely, Pye. Most definitely. And I want to take this from the serious to a little bit more of a ha-ha topic. So we had a listener suggest that we play the game, which is worse. And they suggested several topics. You kicked in a few topics. So I want to run you down this list, Pipe, and I want you to say which is worse when I give you a choice between two things, okay?
All right.
All right. The first one, and I think we're going to have a lot to say about this one, and it's going to be a tough choice. Which is worse, Pipe? Pompous reform dudes or self-righteous progressive folks?
Oh, which is worse?
So dudes who know what's best for everyone theologically versus dudes who know what's best for everyone socially and politically. Well,
these are like the yin and the yang. It's one, yeah, one cannot exist without the other. One is the counterbalance to the other. So,
dude, to be fair, one is great for business for the other. You know what I mean?
Both thrive on the other's idiocy.
Oh, incredible. It's such great energy. So, Pipe, which is worse? If you had to choose pompous reform dudes or self-righteous progressives, who would be worse?
Well, this is choosing between the temptation to, you know, to shoot. Everybody gets most frustrated at their own family, you know, because you know their flaws. Like, I know the reformed flaws better than I know anything else. And so it's easy there's a temptation to be like, well, those are the worst because they drive me nuts on a regular basis. The other side is, you know, the quote unquote enemy. And so there's the temptation there to sort of to point a finger at them. I think I'm going to go ahead and say that the pompous reform dudes are worse.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Because, and I'm very willing to be swayed on this, but sure, here's my rationale. The attitude, the pompous aspect of how they come across undermines the message completely.
Mm.
You know, so it's because they're talking about grace and theology and scripture and all of these things while being a jackass. And so that's incongruous.
Uh-huh.
And I think if they would be humble and open-minded, it would take away a lot of these sort of self-righteousness and aggression on the other side. I don't know that it would bring anybody closer to agreement, but it would at least bring people closer to civility. So I'm going to say that the pompous reform dude is worse in just big picture.
Interesting.
What's your take?
The way, Pipe, I think,
yeah,
maybe because I live and work in higher ed, I've made my peace with pompous bloviating. I mean, it's the kind of thing you have to, if you're kind of going to make your living in higher ed, you got to make your peace with that. So I don't know if it's one of those things where I've just grown so accustomed to it. You know what I mean? I can almost not recognize it anymore when it's happening. So I think there's a level of distastefulness in self-righteous progressives in the sense that I think they're really riding the guilt train more than, I mean, reform dudes are just like, I'm right, let me tell you how I'm right. But I think with the progressive deal, it's sort of, you know, look at all the amazing things I'm doing to make the world a better place. And don't you feel horrible for not doing those things? You know what I'm saying?
I can totally see that.
Yeah. And so there's,
I guess I'm impervious to that because, maybe I lack a conscience. I don't know, but it doesn't sort of dent my spirit when they say that. I'm just like, good for you. Nice dreadlocks.
Interesting. Yes, I do. There was a time pipe and this is maybe a lot of vulnerability. And I want to hear this from you. Was there ever a time, and let's go as far back as we need to. So like going back into undergrad, freshman year, whatever. Was there ever a time when you seriously wanted to be white guy with dreads, social justice guy, and have that as your persona? Because I'm going to be honest with you, there was a short time where I thought I could be that guy. And apologies to everyone in my life during that time, because I'm sure I was insufferable. But I want to know if you had a similar time.
Yes and no. Yes to the social justice aspect, but I always sneered at that look. I never understood why when somebody moved from sort of upper crust evangelicalism into the social justice space, the sort of justification by poverty side of things, why yes. they ended up looking like they were trying to be a white Bob Marley. I never got it. I'm like, why do you have to smell bad to care about the poor? But in my attitude, definitely. Like it was you are holier if you live in the hood. That whole thing. And that's something that I'd say that there's a thread that I'm still attached there, which might be why I have some empathy for the social justice warriors amongst us. But no, I never wanted that look. I always thought the look was stupid and have made fun of that consistently for about 20 years.
Interesting. Pipe, do you think every affluent, like Christian white person goes through that phase at some time or another? Like, oh, I suck because I'm
judging affluent. Judging by last week's conversation about Carl Lentz and
maybe not.
The abundance of massive, wealthy mega churches, I'm going to say no. Yeah. I think there are a lot of people who are like, nah, man, I like my BMW. I'm good.
Yeah, you're right, man.
Let me cut you a check and then get off my porch. You smell bad.
Exactly. Pipe, I'm going to throw another one at you, okay? Which is worse, think pieces or responses to think pieces? And before you launch into this, I want you to do a little defining for us. So tell us in your own words, what defines a think piece?
Okay, so think piece could also be called a hot take. You know, it is the response, usually lengthier than it ought to be and far less thought out. Sure. Than it ought to be, with a distinct angle, usually trying to create additional controversy, or it's sort of a well actually take. So an event happens, people are like, well, actually, you should think about it this way.
Right.
Or in our camp, it's the how Christians should think about X, usually 7 points and 17,000 words. And so that is the think piece. It's the perspective that's trying to be new. That is kind of like, well, it's either stupid or it's like, well, yeah, of course.
Pipe, do you think at some level our disdain for the think piece is rooted in the idea that someone's sitting there going, the world really needs my 15,000 words on this topic? You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's the piece itself that even like I take umbrage with, but I'm just sort of in awe of the attitude that says,
yes,
the world needs this. You know, the world is not going to be complete without my 15,000 words on, players kneeling in the NFL or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
They're the missing piece in someone's intellectual puzzle.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's the same way that I'm in awe of people who want to climb Mount Everest. You know, like God bless you, man. Go for it. But
well, see, that one I look at and I'm like, I don't get it. Like, the sort of thrill seekers, I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
This one is different because there's a sense of like, no, this is my playground. Yeah. Like, you just charged into the middle of my playground where I was having a good time and started screaming that everybody needed to play your game, you know? And so there's also a little bit of jealousy here because as somebody who writes and puts things on the internet, the hot takers are the ones who are like, they're constantly cutting to the front of the line. And you're like, hey man, I'm trying to say something here that it's not nearly as you know, cantankerous and pointed as yours, but it might be helpful to somebody, but nobody's going to hear it over the how Christians should think about X take. So there's a little bit of sort of territorial jealousy there, at least for me. There's, again, there's me being vulnerable.
No, I get that, man. I get that. I appreciate the vulnerability. Yeah, man. I think for me, what's worse is always responses to think pieces, because I can read stuff on like TGC and feel okay about it. But then when I hop into the comments section, I always like wish I was dead. I mean, it's just like, that's like the,
or you wish
that's the end of the world to me. Like the guy who writes 7,000 words in response to the article and he does it in the comments section.
Yes. Hell is a Christian comment section.
Oh my gosh, dude. Oh, like, and I hate myself for looking, and I hate the guy for doing that. And like, nobody wins, you know, nobody wins in that scenario at all.
Yeah. I agree that the response is worse for a couple reasons. One is that if it's a terrible take in the first place, let it die a quick and natural death, and every response to it breathes life into that crap.
That's true.
Like, it's like, hey, did you see this terrible take? It's like one of those things where somebody opens their gym bag and they're like, oof, this thing stinks. Here, smell it. Like, yeah, no, yeah. Like, it stinks. Why would I want to smell it? It's that's the response. And there's also like, if your starting point is a terrible take and you're responding to it, you can't have a good take. Like the best take is that's dumb.
Yeah.
Like just that it's dumb. And then the last thing is sort of the principle from all things sports. So if there's a late hit in a football game and the ref doesn't see it, you know what they will see? The guy who hits the guy who did the late hit.
Exactly.
So it's the guy who responds, who always gets the technical foul, gets the 15-yard penalty, gets thrown out of the game, whatever it is. Yeah. So you are that idiot if you respond to a think piece.
That's true. And again, apologies for the sports talk. Okay, truly, I feel very convicted about that. So if people didn't sort of get that analogy that you were trying to draw, let me just say we're about to move on from sports. And Pipe, I want to give you one more. What's worse?
All right.
CCM, so contemporary Christian music, or TV preachers? CCM or TV preachers? Man.
I mean, qualitatively, I don't even know how to answer this question, because they're both just like this. It's the kind of thing where if you were given 3 seconds to listen to one or see the other, you go, oh, that's, I know what that is. Like they're their own thing. Right, it's a little bit like a soap opera. You know, there's just whatever that lighting and the camera angle is, 3 seconds and you're like, oh, I know exactly what that is. So I can pick that one up. So absolutely. Like qualitatively, they're absolutely. Just like, you can't even compare them to something else. But I think I'm going to go with CCM, because I think it's more sort of pervasive and insidious. You know, like TV preachers are scam artists who prey on the weak and the foolish. CCM preys on like a soccer mom with a master's degree. And it suckers people in. Like people's theology gets bad or it feeds into bad theology. Like people use it as it's medicinal. So they're like, I'm having a bad day. I'm going to turn on the local CCM station. And which offers no actual substance. And it's just, I'm going to go with it for being insidious and also being just widespread. Like living in the Bible Belt, there's like 9 Christian music stations. And again, if I'm flipping stations in the car, give me 3 seconds and I'm like Christian station, Christian station, Christian station.
Dude, that's true. There's something about like the pace and the tone of the music. You just know, like, you know, after like a half a second, what you're listening
and
to.
I think it also ruins people's taste in music too. And I don't want to get elitist and snotty and start, you know, not that I'm opposed to that, but I don't want to do that right now. But I think if people begin to tap into that kind of music and they're like, this is my favorite, you're like, that's a little bit like saying a McDonald's cheeseburger is your favorite food.
Yeah. I'm going to choose CCM as well, Pipe, because of people rapping who shouldn't have ever tried to rap. And I think I'm thinking specifically of Carmen from the 80s in like a puffy purple jacket phase in which, yes, in which he tried to rap, and also DC Talk from the 90s in which every like rap video trope, like the blacktop, you know, basketball court in the city surrounded by a chain link fence, like they
high top fades. What do they wear? Like pony basketball shoes,
and gold chains. Like they included all these things in their videos, but yet it didn't make it a rap video. You know what I mean? It was a fascinating deal. So I'm going CCM as well. But before we close out of the show today, Pipe, we could go a little more earnest again if we want, or not. But the last topic is, what are you thankful for? We've got Thanksgiving coming up. This app's going to drop probably Thanksgiving week. So
that's right.
What are you thankful for?
So after complaining for 30 minutes, we should say something positive.
Exactly.
Well, let me think. I'm trying to decide exactly how sincere to be and how earnest to be and how, you know, and what to pick otherwise.
Yeah. Dude, I'll warn you that I'm going to go earnest for at least one of mine.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, on my non-earnest one right now, as we speak, I'm thankful for Case Keenum, which is a phrase I never thought I would utter in my life because he has been the butt of jokes for me. So Case Keenum, again, sorry, listeners, sports fandom, we'll make this quick. He was the backup quarterback for the Vikings to begin this year. Yeah. And backup quarterbacks notoriously are backups for a reason. But since filling in for the always injured Sam Bradford, who I was not confident would make it through the season healthy, has led the Vikings to a 7-2 record, or 8-2 now, I guess. I can't remember what the record is right now. Two losses, lots of wins, and has looked pretty good in the process. So I'm thankful for Case Keenum because he has made this Viking season so much more enjoyable than it could have been with an injured starting quarterback. So that's my non-earnest
one. Dude, he's been sensational. Threw for like 350 yards yesterday against the Redskins. Yeah, he's been great.
Four touchdowns on the road. Yeah, he looked great. So there's my non-earnest one, Ted, to you.
So, okay. So I'm going to go earnest first because today is my lady's birthday. So KK, if you're listening, happy birthday. I am thankful for my lady. We've been married 20 years. She's put up with a lot of crap from me and,
including weekly recordings of this podcast,
And Pipe, I have to tell you, she listens to every podcast because she wants to. Like I know that she wouldn't unless she liked it because, full disclosure, she hasn't read all my books. Like there have been books that I've written about various sports things, especially where offended her. She just hasn't read them. But she listens to every episode religiously, loves the program. And I'm very thankful for KK, for my lady.
She shares a birthday with my daughter. Because my older daughter turns 12 today. And also thankful for her because I use my kids often as examples in this, often in a way that pokes fun at them for the way that kids are kind of dumb. But she's a pretty remarkable young lady who is 12, which is a crazy age because it's this weird transition from being like just a cute little child to an adolescent growing into adulthood. Yeah. But she's pretty awesome. And so happy birthday to her as well. And I'm thankful for her and my other daughter, but I'll highlight the one with the birthday today.
Nice, nice, man. Yeah, 12 is wild. It's a wild ride for sure. So, Pipe, we have done what we always do in this program, in which we've wandered to and fro, and we missed Big R, and we wish him good health, and we want him to be back here on the program. But more importantly, we want him to be back on the road so that cities in the
rough. He uses Hyatt points.
Yeah, he's got to use those Hyatt points. And I mean, these C-list reformed conferences in Rust Belt cities aren't just going to staff themselves. So,
Ronnie, Louisville misses you.
Louisville misses you. Ronnie, this is for you, baby, if you're listening. I know he doesn't listen to the show or even think about the show. He's very clear about that, about how disaffected he is about the program. But if you're listening, baby, this is for you. Also, I want to give a quick shout-out, Pipe, to my good friend Johnny Folks. Johnny Folks goes to church with me at Cornerstone Community Church in Jackson. And he broke his fibula and tibia playing pickup basketball the other day. He's a huge, huge fan of the program, loves our show, always like comments on Twitter and likes our stuff. So Johnny, if you're listening, man, we wish you a speedy recovery as well. And
that sounds like a really painful injury.
Dude, it looks super painful. He's in this like hip to ankle leg brace that just looks miserable. But he's a great dude.
Well, soon, John.
Yeah, great dude. Never complains. Good basketball player too, man. Kind of an undersized but very athletic guard who would just go to the basket with reckless abandon. So, Johnny, get well. We want to see you back on the courts. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
In a recent survey, parents reported that 52% of homeschooled children need learning accommodations. These parents need practical advice, encouragement, and hope to fuel their homeschooling efforts. The Empowering Homeschool Conversations podcast is where parents gain wisdom on how to teach unique learners successfully at home, like Laura, who recently told us, "I needed this episode. I don't need a fancy curriculum or need to be a special ed teacher to teach my son. You have given me hope." To listen now, go to Life Audio or search Empowering Homeschool Conversations on your favorite podcast app.